From Harrisburg to Erie, Altoona to Lebanon, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Penswoods is notorious for state government corruption. Now a new series of podcasts takes a stroll through the annals of Pennsylvania political corruption. Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting joins us with details. A legislative proposal to raise the state minimum wage to $15 per hour would have wide-ranging consequences. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi explain on this week's Allegheny Institute report. And Bidenomics is not restoring the American dream, but prosperity is possible. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity PA has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Chris Nicholas in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. After Governor Josh Shapiro backed out of his budget deal with Senate Republicans, the state budgeting process has ground to a halt and may stay that way until late September. Senate Republicans had agreed to a number of the governor's priorities in exchange for his support of the Lifeline Scholarship Program, which would provide $100 million in funding to help students in the state's worst-performing school districts find other education options. But faced with stiff opposition from labor unions and House Democrats, Shapiro broke the deal. As a result, Senate Republicans have refused to call the chamber back into session to complete the budgeting process. Shapiro's vow to line-item veto the school choice program, which he supported both on the campaign trail and in budget negotiations, poisoned his previously amicable relationship with Senate Republican leaders. With the state budget in limbo, neither the House nor the Senate are scheduled to return to session until late September or until the stalemate is broken, whichever comes first. Meanwhile, a Real Clear Opinion research poll shows school choice options, such as the one Governor Shapiro has vowed to veto, actually enjoy strong public support. 71% of poll respondents indicated their support of school choice options, just 13% opposed. Pennsylvania House Democrats are at odds with their own constituents, as 66% of Democrats support school choice options, along with 80% of Republicans. Black voters, in particular, are supportive of school choice, with those options earning 73% support in that group. The poll notes support for school choice has increased by 7% since April of 2020. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Corruption in Pennsylvania state government is almost as old as the Commonwealth itself. Now a new series of podcasts takes a stroll through the annals of Pennsylvania political corruption. The podcasts are hosted by veteran political consultant Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. He joins us now to discuss the podcast series. Chris, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Chris, with the PA Political Digest, you have a whole series of podcasts now about corruption in Pennsylvania, a stroll through the annals of political corruption. Our listeners know that corruption has been a persistent problem in Pennsylvania over decades, centuries, actually. They may not realize the depths of it. Tell us, what was the genesis of the idea to have this series of podcasts?
Well, Loman, first, thanks for having me on to talk about this. I had wanted to do a podcast for a while. I've been in politics for nearly 50 years, starting as a kid. So talking about politics is pretty much all I know how to do. But I wanted to do something a little bit off the beaten track. So a lot of political podcasts are two or three people sitting around talking about the news of the day, which is fine, but that had been done. So towards the beginning of 2023, I was talking to Brad Bumstead, a longtime Capitol reporter who had just retired. And in the middle of chatting with him, I just blurted out, wouldn't it be cool to do a podcast on Pennsylvania political corruption? And he said, yes. Brad has written not one but two books on political corruption in Pennsylvania. The next thing I blurted out was, hey, wouldn't it also be great if we could get John Baer, the former Philadelphia Daily News political columnist, to also be in the podcast? And Brad said, yeah, that'd be great too. So then I thought, boy, I better call John Baer and ask him if he wants to do it, which luckily he did. So that's why I said one of the things we're going to do is we're going to have a limited series. We have five on various types of political corruption in the state. and I want to keep them short. They're 35 to 45 minutes. And I wanted to explore what I call the nooks and crannies and the only in Pennsylvania aspects of them. For example, episode one, we talk about the meteoric rise and fall of Kathleen Kane, the state's first elected Democrat Attorney General, first woman. And the only in Pennsylvania part is she had an identical twin sister. Okay, that exists out there. But her identical twin sister, Ellen, also worked at the Attorney General's office. So when does that happen? And in our pre-production meeting, Brad Bumstead, who had spent several chapters in his books on Kathleen Kane, said, oh yeah, one of her initial court appearances when she and all her phalanx of supporters and lawyers walked into the courtroom and the cameras were going crazy, snapping pictures. It wasn't actually Kathleen Kane. It was their sister, Ellen. They played a joke on the press. So it's that type of thing I wanted to bring out. I didn't want to go through a line-by-line resuscitation of what the charges were, because that would take 5 hours for each of these. And the other thing we did is I said, let's have two general topics per episode. So a primary focus and a secondary focus. So episode one, which is out now at papoliticaldigest.com, the primary focus is Kathleen Kane. And the secondary focus is the huge construction scandal that happened when our beautiful state capitol was built in early 1900, around 1904, 1905. The cost overruns in today's dollars would be close to $500 million.
So this corruption has been going on for a very long time in Pennsylvania, not recent?
That's the point we make in that Carrara marble in the Capitol. Maybe some of that corruption and greed and graft seeped through the marble and has infected ongoing generations. So that was the first episode. The second episode, we talked about Bonusgate and its scandal cousin, Computergate. And again, an only in Pennsylvania moment. Loman, you remember this because we're both of the same age. But two ex-House speakers, one Republican, one Democrat, were in jail at the same time and were cellmates for 2 weeks. Only in Pennsylvania does that happen. So that was the primary focus on how Bonusgate and Computergate roiled the Capitol in the late aughts, early 2010s, and dozens of people went to jail. And the secondary focus was about the three Ori sisters in Western PA, one a state senator, one a Superior Court judge, and then a Supreme Court judge, and a third sister, their campaign manager. They got into a blood feud with the Zapalas, who was a former Supreme Court Chief Justice and the current District Attorney of Allegheny County, Stephen Zapala. Two other Supreme Court members who had to resign because of porn emails they had. And then one of my favorite parts was what I call the expungement of an entire court system in Philadelphia, traffic court. They couldn't find honest people to be on it. It had been just riddled with corruption. So they literally, Loman, they did away with an entire court system by an act of the General Assembly signed into law by Tom Corbett. And to me, that was just emblematic of the problems you have in Philadelphia.
We are talking with Chris Nicholas. Chris Nicholas with the PA Political Digest. He's talking about a series of podcasts here, A Stroll Through the Annals of Political Corruption. We're going to give this again, but where can people hear this, Chris?
Well, if they go to wherever they listen to podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, they can find it. They can also go to our webpage, which is papoliticaldigest.com, and they can read about it there and listen to the episodes and then use their favorite podcast tool. Or if you don't have one, that's not a big deal. You can just go to our website, and next to each episode, there's a little button you can click to listen to it right there.
So episodes one and two are there?
Episodes one and two are there. And as we record this in mid-July, episode three has just dropped. That is on the main topic is South Philadelphia State Senator Vince Fumo, who has been dubbed the Vince of Darkness and who's pioneered the use of what he called OPM, other people's money, to fund his eccentricities and his lavish lifestyle, despite the fact that he inherited a bank from his dad who had inherited it from his dad, was wealthy. As we talk about, he was a member of Mensa, a boat captain, a lawyer, all sorts of things. And then got into this trouble where he just had basically an overwhelming personality disorder that caused him to always want to keep acquiring things. That was the main focus of episode 3, which just dropped today as we speak. And what we talk about, you know, we have a back and forth. I'm a Republican political consultant. That's what I'm usually on here talking about. And Brad Bumstead and John Baer are longtime journalists. Brad is retired. John is semi-retired. So I'm on there always railing against these politicians who were abusing their privileges. And those two guys, journalists, were saying, well, yeah, look at all the good he did. And, you know, he brought back lots of extra billions to Philadelphia. And I'm like, look, that's what public officials get paid to do. They get paid to help the public. So let's not give them a ticker tape parade because they brought back money. So we have a back and forth because, as John Baer says in episode 3, you know, they're journalists. They're not moralists, right? So, and then also the secondary focus in episode 3 is all the decrepit members of Congress from Philadelphia who have gone to jail over the years for what I call all the usual Philadelphia reasons. We go from Abscam, where FBI agents posed as fake Arab sheiks, and run all the way through Chaka Fatah. So those are the first three episodes. To come, episodes 4 and 5, episode 4 will focus on the terrible tragedy of Bud Dwyer, the state treasurer in Pennsylvania, who killed himself live at a press conference the day before he was to be sentenced for bribery. And that way his wife could keep his $1.28 million state pension. And after that, we talk about the other row office guys and women, Al Benedict, Rob McCord, the Hafe, Barbara Hafer, and how they got in trouble during their time in office and after. And the fifth episode, which we're doing the editing on now, talks about that terrible Cash for Kids episode up in NEPA, Northeast PA, Luzerne County, where these two terrible, corrupt county judges were sending kids unnecessarily to juvie because they were getting kickbacks from the private company that ran it. And we talk a little bit about the Republican attorney general who went down, Ernie Priate, because corruption here is equal opportunity. Loman. And then we finish with a couple oddities, a Republican state rep from Erie, who's one staffer called her a witch, another young state senator who tried to use state money to pay someone who turned out to be a prostitute, and a look to the future, and where we kind of discuss things and what we learned in the podcast. So again, PAPoliticalDigest.com. I think it's a unique take on a special issue that needs more focus.
A Stroll Through the Annals of Political Corruption, a new podcast from the PA Political Digest. Chris Nicholas, once again, give us where people can go to listen to. I commend you on being able to fit it all into a 5-part series. That took a lot of planning and preparation.
That is the number one comment I get from people, Loman. They say, 5 episodes only, you could do, you know, 150. someone can do 145 more. We decided to do 5. So the Pennsylvania Political Digest podcast, A Stroll Through the Annals of Pennsylvania Political Corruption. Go to wherever you download podcasts, Apple Play, Spotify, Google, or to our website, PAPoliticalDigest.com.
Chris Nicholas, thank you for being back with us.
Thank you.
Raising the state minimum wage to $15 per hour would have far-reaching and often unintended consequences. To learn more, we turn to Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi for this Allegheny Institute Report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. Your most recent policy brief, which is available at our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org, talks about a proposal to raise the minimum wage in Pennsylvania. Frank, can you give our listeners an idea of what exactly the proposal is that is pending in the General Assembly?
Absolutely. It's already passed the House, and it's sitting in the Senate, and the governor said he would sign it. But what it would do is raise the current minimum wage, which in Pennsylvania is the same as the federal minimum wage, is $7.25 per hour, in steps to eventually reach $15 an hour by 2026. Now, the governor has said that he actually would like to see it go to $15 an hour quickly, like in January of 24. So it's a matter of when, but that seems to be the goal, is to get to $15 an hour. So we looked at this in a couple of different avenues. One, how does it compare with other minimum wages nationwide, and how will it really impact those in Pennsylvania?
Let's talk about that first point. The drawback is when you compare Pennsylvania's $15 minimum wage proposal to other states. What is the shortcoming in that?
When you look nationwide, there are three states in the District of Columbia that have minimum wages at or greater than $15 an hour. In California, it's $15.50. In District of Columbia, it's $16.10. Massachusetts is $15 even. In Washington State, it's $15.74. Now, what's interesting is that all three states in the District of Columbia have costs of living that are much greater than what you would find here in Pennsylvania. Now, to make this comparison, what we did was we went to a cost of living website, a group, NerdWallet.com has one, Forbes.com has one. We use NerdWallet, and you can put in how much would $15 an hour in San Francisco get you in cities in Pennsylvania. I chose three cities, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and Erie. And for example, if you had a job earning $15.50 in San Francisco, which is their minimum wage, it would be equal to the buying power of $8.39 in Pittsburgh, $8.79 in Philadelphia, and $7.33 in Erie. If you were to take Pennsylvania's $15 minimum, if they were to enact that legislation, it would have the same purchasing power as $27 per hour at a job in San Francisco. So that cost of living makes a big difference. And because of our lower cost of living, $15 an hour in Pennsylvania go much, much farther. And we did the same thing, you know, in D.C. it's $16.10. The cost of living adjusted in Pittsburgh, you would need just $10.34, $10.87 in Philadelphia, and $9 in Erie for a average of $10.07, which would be 37.5% lower than what a $15 minimum wage would be worth here in Pennsylvania.
How would the minimum wage increase, if it were enacted, affect certain industry sectors? Can you give us some examples?
Right. We talk about wage, you know, it's just one part of the compensation picture for any worker. Cost of labor also includes things like sick days, earned vacation days, insurance, and firms matching Social Security, Medicare payments. The firm would also be on the hook, not just to pay more to the individual, but also pay more to the government in Medicare matches and Social Security matches. So when you're boosting that wage rate to $15 an hour, you're not just affecting that lowest rung, because each individual rung on top of that is going to also want to be compensated effectively. Those who are currently earning $15 or more are going to want to make sure that their experience, their skill set that they have accumulated over the years is rewarded appropriately. So if someone's making $7 an hour and you double that to 15, someone who's making 15 is going to want to see their wage rate rise appropriately as well. So this could have shock waves throughout a lot of the industry. You know, think of throwing a pebble in a pond, right? You see that initial wave, but there's also circles going out. So we did look at a couple of areas here. First thing we notice is in rural counties, it's going to have a much greater impact than in the urbanized counties of Allegheny and Philadelphia. And by that, again, cost of living differences. It's cheaper to live in, let's say, Snyder County than it is in Allegheny County. In Snyder County, we noticed that the entry-level wage stood at roughly $11.70 per hour. In Allegheny County, the entry-level wage is roughly $13.56 an hour. So you're looking at almost a $2 an hour difference because, again, the cost of living. So if you were to raise a statewide minimum wage to $15 an hour, that would be a 30% rise in Snyder County. They'd have to go up by $3.30, but just $1.35 in Allegheny County, about 10% increase. So you're going to affect the rural counties a lot more than you will the urban counties, because a lot of folks already are fairly close to that $15 an hour in urban counties. Now, let's talk about the industry sectors. What industry sectors are most likely to be affected? Where are the lower paid workers? And again, all of our data comes from the Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry, the PAWorkStats.com. Things like food prep and service, personal care, sales, retail sales, building and grounds, maintenance, and healthcare support. So we looked at those five sectors. And food prep and service, according to the PA Department of Labor, the entry-level wage in Pennsylvania is $9.68. Half the employees earn less than $13.33. So when you push up that minimum wage, that'd be a 31% increase in pay just in that sector. And let's look at the overall cost in that sector. 2022, you had 452,980 people working in food prep and service. Figure that runs a statewide average of about $11.7 billion for that industry. If you push that wage up to $15 an hour, and again, assuming the number of workers remains the same, the wage cost would jump to $15.3 billion. So you'd have a $2 billion increase in wages in that sector alone. One of the things to think about is this trend to, if you go to a McDonald's or even a Sheetz convenience store, the self-serve kiosks. And you may see more of that in the food prep and industry service. In personal care service, we estimated that a statewide, if you raise that minimum wage to $15 an hour, you're going to statewide raise your cost from $3.6 billion to $4.6 billion. Again, assuming the employment level remains the same. Healthcare support, the same thing. So you're going to talk about wages across the state going from $9.58 billion to $11.6 billion. One of the things to keep in mind with personal care and healthcare support, a lot of that stuff is paid for by the government. A lot of that stuff is agencies of the state that rely on federal payments or statewide payments to push through. So then the taxpayers would be on the hook for those increased costs, maybe not necessarily the businesses. Building maintenance, same thing. You have 159,600 workers, average wage of $12 an hour. You raise up to $15. And your overall costs are going to go from $4.87 billion to $5.73 billion. And sales and related, they'll go from $19.5 billion to $21.6 billion. Overall, if you add the differences to these five sectors, you could see in Pennsylvania those costs going up by $10 billion statewide. Again, assuming that all those people continue on and are still employed. That's not always going to be the case. You're going to see, especially in that private sector, food prep, retail sales, lawn and care maintenance, where they may start letting some people go. We had some responder to the policy brief say that, well, I'm okay spending an extra 10% on the price of a hamburger if it means I'm lifting somebody else up. The problem is you're talking about price increases of the magnitude of about 30%. So depending on where you live, this could be even greater. So the cost of Pennsylvanians will end up being enormous if this were to go through, especially in one fell swoop.
Frank, great stuff as always, and you can read this policy brief again at our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Prosperity is possible, but Bidenomics is not the answer. We learn why from Emily Green of Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
South Carolina has become the must-win battleground state for many presidential hopefuls. From county dinners to conventions to everything in between, GOP candidates have flocked to the Palmetto State to share their vision for overcoming record-high inflation, soaring energy prices, and generally the effects of what the 46th President of the United States has now coined as Bidenomics. Most recently, President Biden took his Bidenomics tour to West Columbia, South Carolina, undoubtedly a nod to the importance of this state for many GOP presidential hopefuls, to tout his plan, which he claims restores the American dream. And what a claim indeed. The prices of goods and services remain at record high levels. For instance, families gathered far and wide to celebrate the 4th of July earlier this month, and the prices to do so, from the cost of fuel to gather with family to the price of burgers at the grocery store, increased exponentially from the year prior. The burgers you bought for family and friends this year cost a whopping 26% more than last. Families are feeling the impact of reckless, rampant Washington spending. The fear of recession looms on the minds of Americans of all walks of life and in every corner pocket of this great country. Let's go back for a moment to President Joe Biden's claim that his economic policy, or Bidenomics if you will, is helping restore the American dream. In a recent door-to-door survey of Pennsylvanians conducted by the Americans for Prosperity team, ranging from constituents in Harrisburg to Erie to Philly and everywhere in between, 67% of over 2,000 individuals surveyed sadly believe that the country's best days are behind us, and future generations will not have access to the American dream. This is a startling statistic. If you're listening in today, you know that we can change the trajectory of our country by allowing sound policy solutions to be the norm in Washington. However, we need bold leaders to stand up and do what's right for the country. That's why Americans for Prosperity has launched Prosperity is Possible, a nationwide campaign helping to connect individuals with federal policies that we know will allow each American to prosper and reignite their pathway towards the American dream. What's the difference between Bidenomics and versus Prosperity is Possible if both are working to help restore the American dream? What makes Prosperity is Possible successful? Simple. Prosperity is Possible puts you in the driver's seat of your pursuit of the American dream, not the government. Prosperity is Possible focuses on three goals: lower inflation, unleash energy abundance, and empower the workforce. We can achieve these three goals and remove governmental barriers to opportunity through a number of federal policy priorities such as H.R. 1, the Lower Energy Costs Act, and the Employee Rights Act. H.R. 1, or the Lower Energy Costs Act, does exactly as the name describes. By allowing energy industry leaders to innovate, and by removing burdensome regulations to energy production, we can ensure that Pennsylvanians are able to purchase fuel at the lowest price point possible. Long gone will be the days of special one-day deals from national gas station chains, as the market will be able to determine the lowest price point for consumers. The Employee Rights Act serves as a direct contrast to President Biden's PRO Act, and it works to ensure that independent contractors, gig workers, and freelancers continue to have the flexibility to find employment that meets their specific needs. For mothers, college students, or individuals looking to maximize their contribution to the workforce at large, this flexibility to set their own schedules is critical. POTUS's PRO Act would limit the ability for individuals to seek out flexible work through a three-pronged criteria test. This alone would upend hundreds of thousands of freelance roles. Through the Employee Rights Act, we can ensure that all individuals can contribute to the workforce in a way that makes sense for their schedules and their families. We need your help to secure the ability for individuals to pursue their version of the American dream. Through Prosperity is Possible, we can reject the principles of Bidenomics and help all individuals achieve economic prosperity. Next week, Dr. Jill Biden will be in Pittsburgh to tout the president's so-called plan to improve our nation's economy. Check out prosperityispossible.com, sign your name to our growing list of supporters, and help elevate your voice in this fight for fiscal sanity. Again, head to prosperityispossible.com, sign your name to send a message to Washington, and join our movement of millions. We can reignite the American dream. Help us make this a reality.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRQV-FM in Ridgeway, WKHB-FM in Scottsdale, along with WIOO-FM and WHYL-FM in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal, plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.